Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants. Featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazzoni. Part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
Hey, 5-2, that was a pretty exciting week, I would say.
Yeah, I will take a 5-2 homestand pretty much any time, but especially when you have two good divisional opponents, one of them's the first place team. I mean, that is a solid to excellent homestand. You cannot really nitpick a lot about that record.
No, I mean, they had a pair of walk-off wins, very exciting. All three of the Diamondbacks games were extremely competitive, very exciting. I mean, it's like, what more do you want? It was a very entertaining week. And I think kind of the bigger news, I was right. Just want to make clear that I was right. One of the things I said in our last episode was like the lineup, because of the pitching issues, needs to really step it up. Now, they've been outscored 26-17 in their last four games, and they're also 2-2 in their last four games. But the Giants lineup did step it up. That was a big key part of this Diamondbacks series, was getting to the pitching for the Diamondbacks, which have been pretty good for this to this point. But they made it, they all look like they came to play, really. It was pretty cool to see.
And just the way that they kept battling, you know, they went down in against the Diamondbacks in the Friday night game. They came back and they just kept hitting. The Diamondbacks tied, you know, it was back and forth in the Saturday game repeatedly. You know, one team takes the lead, another one takes the lead, then the other team takes the lead and they tie it up. And the Giants just got enough off of Merrill Kelly, a great pitcher this year. They had a really good series offensively, even with a little bit of a dud on Sunday.
Also, I was hoping for Luis Matos to hit his first home run, and he did against Merrill Kelly. And I didn't realize that 1-4, 5.40 ERA that Kelly had in seven starts at Oracle Park would be such a big deal, but apparently it was. And it was weird how the Saturday and Sunday games sort of swap places in my mind. I kind of imagined that that's how the Giants would go in the last two games, but not quite in the order that I imagined. Ryan Nelson really was able to keep them at bay. But even in that game, it was close until very late. I just want to point out one other thing, because there was one player who did not really stand out in the last four games. We'll get to it in a second. But I want to point out that we had said this a couple of episodes ago, I think. I'm not happy with the strike zone, Doug. I'm really not happy with how the strike zone is going. And this is someone, meaning me, who is a fan of the of the human factor when it comes to balls and strikes. But backing that up was the whole idea of like these guys get graded, and it doesn't seem to be doing anything to make it better.
Right. I mean, it's like if you go into school and they're like, all right, we're gonna give you an F on your test. They're like, oh man, does that affect whether I'm going to graduate? And they're like, no. And so what's it matter?
Right. Does it do anything? Nah.
So if you remember, about a week ago, the Giants played the Dodgers, and the Dodgers were favored by about 2.5 runs in that game, the Saturday game, I think.
It's all a blur.
Yeah, it's all a blur, but we all remember the game. It was the pop-up game. Maybe that was Friday. It was horrible. There was a worse game for umpiring just Saturday. The Diamondbacks, per the umpire scorecard, got 2.76 runs of run expectancy from the missed calls, which included three. It was a way too big strike zone, except for three times that the Giants would have struck out Diamondbacks. And then one of those, Duvall ended up walking him on that pitch, a pitch in the strike zone. The other two, I think they reached against Manaea, but I don't remember offhand. It was just, it's like a staggering display of like, what the hell, dude? If you're going to be bad, just be evenly bad.
All you can do is grouse about it at this point, because nothing's going to change. I mean, the replay reviews that have historically gone against the Giants, it just always feels like a miracle now when it's like, oh, went the Giants' way. That never seems to happen. But this umpire thing, it's not a crisis so much as you can tangibly see how it's impacting these games. The Saturday game in particular, there was a 4-run inning. Duvall gave up a run in the 9th inning. You know, the Giants had to score 7 runs just to win that game. It's like right there that you can really see it. And it shouldn't necessarily in all cases work that way. But I think given the nature of baseball today, with the hitters being smarter, maybe not as, you know, the pitching is always going to have an advantage. But, you know, the hitters are smarter. And so if you can flummox the sequencing of a pitcher, you're actually giving the advantage back to the hitter. And it's just worth pointing out as something to complain about. Not necessarily. I think the season, the last 4 games, I should say, since we last recorded an episode, everything has gone pretty much according to plan. You know, the Giants got blown out. Then they blew a close game late on Sunday. I think it all kind of worked out as it should, but there have been moments where it's like, okay, well, maybe that's not going to hold in the future if these bad calls keep happening. What's not going to hold in the future, Doug, I'm transitioning right now, is your boy, Eason Diaz. What the hell?
I've never heard of Eason Diaz before in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. No, he looked bad. So he came up with the Mike Yastrzemski injury, and he just... what did he go? 0 for 6? 0 for 7?
He's 0 for 8 with 4 strikeouts.
Yeah. Not great. I'll admit that it's not great. His first at-bat, he did hit the ball hard, I remember. It was just, you know, one of those things that got knocked down, I think, by Oracle Park. But he looks a little over-anxious, and it's possible that the 4A player label is correct. You don't want to make that, you know, after 2 games.
No.
Or whatever. But on the other hand, he did look really bad.
Yeah. And anyway, I just wanted to point that out because he was a big topic of conversation multiple times in the last season of our last iteration. And here he is.
Here he is. You're welcome.
So with Yastrzemski on the IL, they also have Luke Jackson now on the IL. That's a big deal to me. Luke Jackson was hitting 95 with pretty much a pretty explosive stuff, and it's going to be a bummer that he's on the IL. Ross Stripling is back, though. 93-94 with that fastball. I love that Alex Pavlovich was like, Ross Stripling is back, but hey, he threw a little harder. You know, I guess with the Giants, we shouldn't really take it. That's not necessarily like Tim Worrell's back and he's throwing 92. Like it's possible the Giants, the tinkering, the AAA thing that we've joked about so often. It's possible we could get a good appearance or two out of Ross Stripling, which didn't seem plausible as of a month ago. So that's the injury update. This is just going to be a seesaw back and forth all season, I think. And I guess let's just do any other random thoughts we might have had about the D-back series. Matos looked fantastic. I love that the attendance really has gone up now that the team's doing better. Obviously, I think school being out and the summer really kicking in, it's like a collision of things. If the Giants had been bad going into the summer, I'm sure they wouldn't be having the excitement that they're getting. But Doug, anything else about this D-back series you think it's worth commenting on?
I mean, just kind of the continued success of Patrick Bailey. He's been so good.
Yeah.
It's really unreasonable to expect literally anyone to be as good as Patrick Bailey's been over his first month and a half or so in the league. Much less a rookie who just got his first call up, but he has been absolutely spectacular on both sides of the ball. He's been really fun to watch. And he's apparently a great hitter right-handed now. They just fixed that. They just decided, you know, we're going to make him good right-handed. We've been telling you for years, he's good side is left side. No, he's good right-handed now. I bet JT Snow somewhere is like, what the hell, guys? You couldn't do that for me?
Yeah. It feels like a little bit of a rope-a-dope. What's going on here? So we were sold a bill of goods, and that's not been the case whatsoever. I like that the Giants, not just the Diamondback series, but let's focus mainly with the Diamondback series. Compared to the Padres, who are performing off of the expectations, below the expectations, so they're coming around now. The Diamondbacks really took that dark horse label in the offseason to heart, and they really have run with it. They're really at the top five in every category. I thought on paper heading into the series, they're the better team than the Giants. I don't think that was actually the case. I might have had that wrong. We might have had that wrong in our analysis. What we probably should have just said is, like, these teams are very equal, and right now the Diamondbacks, maybe they got off to a hot start, and so now the Giants were able to close the gap, and it's equal. That feels more correct because, wow, the Giants really did hold their own with this team that is leading the division, and you can see it. Their lineup is talented. The Giants would love to have a Corbin Carroll, but guess what? The Giants both kind of held him in check for the weekend, and they do kind of have their own collection of players who are really close to equaling him. Michael Conforto stepping up. I love that there's like players, the Giants have enough depth where you're like, oh yeah, Michael Conforto, he's good. And he's like, yeah. he jumped the Diamondbacks on Friday. It was really cool to see. So nothing but encouraging things to take away from this weekend series, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically as much as you'd love to have a sweep, when you have a first place team that comes to your stadium, this series is what you're hoping for. Like, realistically. And so I think you'll take it every time.
So, Doug, what else did you find interesting about the Giants this week?
Well, Brian, I'm so glad you asked. I really enjoyed just having Jock Peterson's energy back on the team. I mean, I know he's been back from his injury for a while, but, you know, you watched him, I think, was it Friday? Where when it looked like he'd beaten out the double play and he goes, I'm so fucking fast. it's just been a lot of fun. Like, it's a fun team right now. And he's kind of exemplifying that. Then he goes on the post-game interview, gives as boring of a post-game interview as possible, because that's how it works. if you're interesting on a post-game interview, you're not doing it right. Someone's going to yell at you. But just having him kind of in the lineup, having him hitting, it's been really great to see.
He's doing almost exactly. I think we're probably expecting a few more home runs out of him by this point in the season. I mean, we're almost three full months through the season. I would kind of expect him to be, what, closer to 20 or in that range. All that aside, you also are expecting the energy levels to be the other thing he provides is the guy can mash and he has a smile and he's a weirdo. And at least we've got that part going. He's come back really great from the IL. He's been really healthy and doing well. So that's a good one. I want to go back to the Patrick Bailey point that you made, because that to me has been the most interesting story, to the point that it actually, you know, it's funny. You mentioned Jock Peterson and the Giants having fun. There's kind of like two things the national media is just becoming aware of. Did you see that John Boy Media? Like, the Giants had a rave after their latest win. Yeah. And everyone jumped on them being like, hey, dingus, they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
Because no one's paying attention. And then just a few days ago, John Paul Morosi, who I've come around and I actually like him. He's a national reporter. He does I think he does the Fox game sometimes. But he was saying, like, no one's talking about Patrick Bailey. The Giants are 17-7 with him starting. They're now 18-8 in games started by Patrick Bailey. And as you said, now he can hit from the right side just fine, just for power, all that stuff. What I want to say is find interesting is you and I kind of joked about this a few weeks ago. But now I think it is starting to make the rounds of, like, we shouldn't be mentioning Buster Posey. No, we can't do that. But now it's still a small enough sample where you're like, we shouldn't. But we should be doing more of that. We should be just bringing up Buster Posey just to say, no. But he needs to keep coming up because this is clearly one of the key parts of the Giants, of the team's turnaround. Unmistakably, when you watch him catch, he steals strikes. He controls the running game. His demeanor in the field, it doesn't change. He is a field general. He is calm, cool, and collected, and he clearly has the talent. We shouldn't mention Buster. I'm not going to compare him to Buster Posey. It's just no. I'm not going to do it. I just find it very interesting that his fantastic performance has really helped boost the Giants' turnaround unmistakably, without question. I mean, what's the Giants' record in June?
It is 16-6.
16-6. And so they're 18-8 with him starting. And they are just, it's not a platoon situation, you know, that because of the bat, you would think it's just like, oh, we got to platoon him. No, it's just like, oh, we can't play him 5 days in a row or whatever. But guess what? They're also pushing him to the limits, and they're playing him more than they would Buster Posey, who we shouldn't be mentioning. We shouldn't be mentioning Buster Posey. It doesn't make sense to do that. But just it's interesting to point out that the Giants' turnaround, for the most part, they were doing pretty well before he got called up, or they were doing better. But unmistakably, he is as big a part of what's going on right now as any other player. And I got to say, he might be in the top two of players who you want to pin the medal on of who's helped turn this around.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. He's been the key to the Giants. I don't know if I'd say turnaround. They were, you know, doing decently when he got called up. He's the one who really helped them take it to the next level.
You know what? For the turnaround aspect of it, let's say this. Perception-wise, he's helped turn, because you're right, the performance was getting better, but, you know, after they started, 6-13, they panic extended Logan Webb. You know what I mean? Like, there was some doldrums going on. And even though they were starting to play a little bit better, the Bailey part of this, it's like knowing that they have excitement behind the plate. I really think that helps. Doug, anything else that you found interesting?
I want to kind of just give a shout out to Taylor Rogers. I'm not going to say we left him for dead after his first couple weeks with the Giants, but things were not looking good. And I feel like I say this every other week about him, but when someone is pitching as well as Taylor Rogers, you should notice it and mention it just all the time, because he has been spectacular for the last 2 months at this point. Yes, he came into the game on Saturday in what was supposed to be Luke Jackson's inning. And not to say he's not prepared beforehand, but you know, that's... you're going to take a little bit of a mental break. You're like, all right, he's got it. I'll come in next inning. And then no. So Taylor Rogers comes in for matchups that the Giants probably didn't want him coming in for. And he pitches scoreless inning, gives up a hit, strikes out one. And it's, you just rely on him now. Like, you just know he's going to do it at this point, which is something that's incredible to have. The Giants had no one like that last year other than Duvall. Mm-hmm. And that's been another huge key, I think, for the Giants.
Doug, I find Anthony DeSclafani's last two starts to be interesting insofar as they weren't great, but they were maybe... I think we talked him down in our Thursday episode, which is kind of deserved, but he had a solid start on Sunday, again, against a first place team. And the Giants really need him to be at least that good, because they are in somewhat of a concerning situation with the rotation, I would say. And I'm trying to pull up. He pitched six innings, and he was getting a lot of swing. He got a lot of swing throughs. He had three strikeouts only, but he only gave up five hits. He had two earned runs. He used his curveball a couple of times as opposed to a slider. So he did try to mix it up. He gave up eight hits in five innings and three runs, but he had six strikeouts. That was against the Padres in the Giants' win there. You know, pitching well enough to keep them in the games, that's kind of, to me, what DeSclafani's ceiling ought to be. Five or six innings, three runs, effectively a quality start guy who can get through it. And the fact that he was doing maybe slightly more than that and was sort of in that, he was almost like the number two starter for a moment in the first month of the season. We didn't need that. We'd need this. So I find it interesting that DeSclafani kind of, I don't know. We'll see what happens this coming week. But like this week, he was not so terrible that you're like, oh, the Giants are in trouble. You're like, okay, having Logan Webb and then kind of two number five starters, if indeed that's what Alex Wood is, that's not great. But it's maybe DeSclafani did not earn the label of, oh God, no. So that's where I'm at with him.
No, I think that's a good point. I think the yesterday's start, the key for him was he didn't walk anybody, you know, give up five hits, don't walk anybody. Sure, two runs, but two runs in six innings is a good start.
Against some tough lefties.
Yeah.
They have some tough lefties on that team.
And the lack of run support isn't, that's not on him. You know, he's not out there trying to hit. No. So, I think that's a good call. He did a good job. So Brian, what's something you found concerning about the Giants this week?
Well, I already teased it, but I'm going to go for it more. Ross Stripling's return just makes me go, God, they really need Alex Cobb back. And I'm concerned at this point about the rotation. I find it concerning that Tristan Beck and Keaton Wynn giving up runs is not an issue. The bullpen giving up runs, by the way, folks, that's what bullpens do. The Giants' bullpen being as good as it has been through this entire run where they've shot back into contention, that's been great. But we have been saying, do not expect this to last all season. So Tristan Beck being having trouble with the strike zone yesterday and Keaton Wynn giving up some runs on Saturday, that's not that surprising. What's going to be tough, though, going forward is if it is Logan Webb and it is Anthony DeSclafani and it is Alex Wood for the next 3 weeks, I think the Giants are in trouble. I don't know how much trouble, just like I don't know how good they actually are, but the ceiling for how good they can be will be clipped if they're not getting at least one other good starter guy in there right now. So I'm a little concerned. I'm not optimistic that Ross Stripling is going to come in there and be an answer at all. And I don't know where we stand with Kyle Harrison. I kind of feel like we're still a month away from him coming up, but I could be wrong.
It doesn't seem like Harrison's going to come up soon. From what just we're seeing, his last start was pretty bad in Round Rock. I think he gave up seven runs in two and a third, which it's not a big deal for prospect status. You know, sometimes you give up runs. It happens. Dealing with that is part of learning to be a pitcher. But it's, you know, he's not necessarily fully cooked yet in the good way.
Right. Not in the veteran way. Exactly.
But what I've been concerned about this week is, the injuries. And this is something I wrote about on my Substack. And then they had two more injuries after I wrote about it just this week, where, you know, Luke Jackson goes down, Mike Yastrzemski goes down. The Giants have guys who can replace them, but they're not as good. Like, I don't mean that as a slight on Ross Stripling. Maybe Ross Stripling will make me look very stupid and pitch five shutout innings the next time he's in the game, and the Giants will say, yep, it's exactly what we knew he would do with the whole time. And then he'll be great forever. But Luke Jackson is looking like a shutdown reliever, you know, a guy who could pitch the eighth inning if you needed to. And now he's gone, and Ross Stripling has been very unreliable this year. Mike Yastrzemski was really hitting well. We had just basically did an entire podcast about how good he was, and he got injured. And the Giants called up Ehsan Diaz, which, setting aside how he's done in two games, is certainly going to be a downgrade. So, I mean, the depth is, the Giants have good depth. They had very good depth coming in the season. They did a really, the front office did a really good job of making sure they would have major league caliber players to withstand the inevitable injuries. The injuries came and the plan worked perfectly, but it just, they just keep getting more injured. And it, there will be a point when you're just going to be kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel. I don't want to say they're there now, but it's, you don't know which, at some point it's going to happen if these injuries keep up. And so, you know, come back soon, Alex Cobb, come back soon, Wilmer Flores, come back soon, whoever, you know, everyone else. But it's a little worrying to see how they're getting a lot thinner because of injuries.
Mitch Haniger getting injured, 100%. They were like, yeah, that's going to happen. We're going to need Alex Cobb getting injured, 100%. That's going to need to happen. Your Luke Jackson point, it reminds me that they're without both Luke Jackson, who is John Brebbia 2.0, and right now they're without John Brebbia 1.0. Those are two big losses in the pen. But I'm going to use that as sort of a jumping off point into my concern, is that they're going into Toronto this week and Brandon Belt is back, baby. And I'm concerned that we're going to be too focused on Brandon Belt bashing in the Giants' brains because they are thin on depth. That is also my big concern, is the injuries. I hope there's nothing weird or cutesy going on with Ross Stripling getting called up now, going back to face his former team, as though that's some sort of fix. But you know what, Doug? The Giants are smarter than me, so that could be exactly what's going on. But that concerns me all the same, because then that means that narrative actually supersedes quantitative analysis, which means, what are we doing here? So is Michael Lewis's Moneyball more valuable than the regression analysis done to help? Is that what's going on here, or no? I'm just convoluting two things. I'm conflating two things. That's what's going on. Yeah. The narrative doesn't matter. Okay.
I think you're conflating two things. I think Ross Stripling his rehab might have been extended, but when Luke Jackson got hurt, they were like, well, he had a good outing. The scouts probably came back with good things to say about him. We'll just put him on the roster and see what happens. I don't think they wanted to call him up now. It was just circumstances kind of pushed them into it. And plus, with the limit on calling someone up and sending him down, you don't want to call up Sean Jelly again for one day or for like a week and then send him back down when you're probably just going to bring Ross Stripling back anyway.
I agree. And we didn't really talk about this in any of our things, but, you know, shout out to Sean Jelly coming up and looking good.
And, yeah, 100%.
And that's a credit to him. You know what? We don't talk about enough, especially with the Giants folding in all these rookie players. Baseball's very hard.
Yeah, it is so hard, especially at the major league level. I was bad at it in middle school. So just like getting all of these players who get better and better. I don't know, man.
You can see, you know, the Diamondbacks players, you know, Zach Davies and Ryan Nelson. Davies had 7 ERA. Nelson had a 5 ERA. Merrill Kelly was their second best pitcher. You could see why they were all in the major leagues, why they were good. And then you could see, you know, the way that data analysis and coaching has worked, it's sort of like, wow, a guy can look really bad on one pitch. Remember, there used to be like Vlad Guerrero or like certain hitters. You're like, wow, he looked really bad on that pitch. And then he's ready to go and he looks amazing like two pitches later. I think with coaching and data analysis, like that's a lot more players these days. And so it's not so much, again, the pitchers still have the advantage, but it's really hard. And seeing Patrick Bailey, seeing Luis Matos, you know, when Casey Schmidt came up and just was hitting the ball for those five games, it's like, that is not an easy thing to roll in there and do. And that's why it's like the Ross Stripling thing, I think, got so much concern, because it's like, wow, it looks very easy for hitters right now against him. And there's nothing he's doing that indicates that that's going to change. But Sean Jelly going back and retooling, and he was a starter in AAA, he comes up and he's pitching in relief now in the major leagues after pitching in relief and getting shelled. There's the confidence, the mental part of the game has to be such a big part, an even bigger part of it than we dare to fathom as fans.
Yeah, 100%. And then my one last concern The Giants are doing all these bullpen games. Ryan Walker is not as good an opener as John Brebbia.
No.
Whatever Brebbia was able to do to kind of get himself ready or to just not care, which is kind of what it seemed like. He's just like, yeah, I'll just show up and pitch. And then, you know, whatever happens, happens. Ryan Walker doesn't have that, which isn't a demerit or anything against him. It's just, it makes the bullpen games a little iffier. And the Giants are going to keep having them because they don't have enough starting pitching.
I think we're getting into that point where we're going to start talking about the trade deadline. I'm certainly interested to see if teams start to move a little bit sooner because August 1st is your trade deadline. That doesn't leave a lot of time to get someone in there. You know, kind of like makes the whole trade deadline, now that I think about it, July 31st, August 1st, like kind of silly, right? You know, the trade deadline, you know, teams should be making more moves sooner. I don't know. Because how many starts are you going to get? You're going to give up a lot for a little bit. I don't know. But that is a very big concern, is maybe one more starter they need to kind of make this all clarified. I like your Ryan Walker point. We had talked about this seems like a good time to figure out, is there another guy we can get in there besides Brebbia as an opener? And I think you're right. But we'll see, because, right, sometimes you just need to give it a little more time.
So. Yeah, I mean, Ryan Walker is still a rookie, and he's not used to starting a game. It's entirely possible he can show up, do fine, and figure it out. It's also possible that he's not comfortable with it. So you don't know.
So 3 in Toronto. We'll be back. We'll be back to preview the Mets series. But Tug, just again to that point, the Giants in the 3 games in Toronto right now, it's all TBD.
Yeah,
we don't know who's starting. You know, Brandon Belt they're going to face. That'll be great. I don't actually have very good memories of the Giants playing in Toronto, so I'm not really looking forward to the series. But at the same time, this is a new Giants team. We don't know.
Yeah, I have some memory. I don't remember what year it was where they went in there and they just got throttled in a short 2-game series.
Yes, I think that was one of the big indicators of like, oh, Matt Cain is toast.
Yeah.
That's kind of my recollection. Yeah. There's that. All right, Doug, tell us more about your writing.
So you can find me at giantsdoug.substack.com, where I write about the Giants every Tuesday and Thursday. Great content twice a week. Brian, where can people find you?
Well, I'm writing for McCoveyChronicles.com still. We're never on fans. Yeah, never heard of it. We're at Fans First Sports Network, at Fans First SN on Twitter. Follow them. Find out who does the 49ers, who does the Warriors. Big news in Warriors land. I don't like Chris Paul. Makes me want to watch the Warriors less, Doug, that Chris Paul is now a Warrior. Anyway, there's that. Give us 5 stars right there in the Spotify app right before you're done washing dishes. You can just press 5 stars. There you go. Also, Apple Podcasts. So until Thursday, we'll be back with an all-new episode.
Go Giants!